This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Happy day before Thanksgiving, everyone. We hope the prep is going well, and if you're traveling, that you're safe and relatively stress-free. A little later in the show, we'll check in on weather and travel conditions around New England.
But first, let's spend some time now with one of the key figures in the gay civil rights movement, lawyer Mary Bonanno. This month marks the 10th anniversary of the Supreme Judicial Court's decision to legalize same-sex marriage in Massachusetts.
Mary Bonanno argued the case before the SJC. That alone is enough to put her in the legal firmament. But just listen to how others in the profession describe her.
A brilliant, quiet, determined advocate in the tradition of Daniel Webster and Clarence Darrow and Margaret Brent, the first woman in the American colonies to appear before a court of the common law.
That was retired SJC Chief Justice Margaret Marshall, who wrote the decision legalizing gay marriage in Massachusetts. And here's Roberta Kaplan, the lawyer who won a landmark Supreme Court case this year that dismantled parts of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act.
In a lot of ways, Mary is really the Thurgood Marshall of our movement.
As you'll hear in a moment, Mary Bonanno appreciates the compliment, but doesn't necessarily agree that she's a modern-day Thurgood Marshall, the jurist who argued against racial segregation in schools and became a Supreme Court justice. But deflecting credit is just part of who Mary Bonanno is. Meghna has more on our story about Mary Bonanno.
Here's a good way to understand just who Mary Bonanno is. She first presented the case Goodridge et al. Versus Department of Public Health to a Massachusetts lower court in 2001. She was pregnant at the time, with twins.
Exactly. It was... Anyway, I survived. We all survived.
To cope with the discomforts of pregnancy, Bonanno would often lie on the floor, prop her legal notes on her burgeoning belly, and shift from side to side as she prepared for the case. Her daughters were born as the case made its way to the Supreme Judicial Court, which meant many long nights for Bonanno and Jennifer Riggins, her partner of many years.
Very often I'd had about 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night because there was one after the other was getting up. Anyway, it was a challenging period.
Now, I should say right here that Mary Bonanno would chide me for drawing attention to her personal life. She's told me that the historic case is the point, not her. Now, it's not a great idea to nitpick with a lawyer, but I will. Because, and I say this with the utmost respect, her story is part of the point. Mary Bonanno's life is emblematic of the families she was fighting for. She was in a long-term loving relationship, raising children, seeking the legal protections and benefits granted by the state to married couples. And certainly the point isn't lost on Bonanno. She acknowledges that her life experiences mirror that of so many gays and lesbians in Massachusetts. She grew up in New York, a girl with three brothers in a boisterous Italian-American family, when, as she put it, the worst thing was growing up Catholic and having a last name that ended in a vowel.
You get a sense in this nation at a very young age that there are various hierarchies out there. And what can I say? I believed then and I believe now in that promise of equal justice for all.
Bonanno went to Hamilton College and later to Northeastern University, and while in school, a lot of things changed for her. At Northeastern, she finally came out to her family.
And it was hard for them. There's no mistaking that. But at the same time, one of the things that has really inspired me so much and kept me optimistic and positive in my current job is watching the slow but steady transformation in my own family. Where there was a time when I was told, Mary Lisa, we don't necessarily agree with you about what you're doing. But at this point, my parents couldn't be more enthusiastic supporters.
Hamilton College was not so supportive. Today, Bonanno holds no ill will against the school, and in fact, she's rather understanding about how Hamilton treated her. She'd come out as a lesbian and was in fear for her safety. And while she says it might sound outrageous in 2013, at the time, Hamilton College told her the best thing to do was to leave.
You know, this was in the late 70s and early 80s. I think at that time, many institutions would have said, okay, well, maybe you should move off campus for a while, which now I think is an appalling response. But at the time, you know, probably seemed judicious to them. If you're having trouble, why don't you leave?
Bonanno eventually moved to Boston, went to law school at Northeastern, and met Jennifer Riggins, her partner to this day. In 1989, Massachusetts became the second state to enact a law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. So the advocacy group GLAAD, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, decided it would need a staff attorney. GLAAD hired Bonato. She began taking cases, a lot of cases.
It was insane.
Insane because the floodgates had opened. People who'd felt under siege for most of their lives finally felt they might have a chance in court for protection of their most basic rights.
We were fighting at that point to have assaults against gay people characterized as what they were, which was criminal assaults and hate crimes. There was one case I had where three men had been attacked in the public garden with a baseball bat. And I had to go to court 14 times to make sure that that case was not thrown out and was prosecuted. Because people in the system kept trying to get the case dumped. They didn't want to deal with it because it was a nice kid who had been wielding the baseball bat.
At that point, marriage wasn't publicly on the agenda for the gay civil rights movement. Bonato's cool calculus has a clear hierarchy. Secure people's personal safety first, then fight for parent-child relationships, and only then approach the marriage question. But things were happening in other parts of the country. In 1993, the Hawaii Supreme Court ruled that a ban on gay marriage could be in violation of that state's constitution. Bonato was emboldened. In 1997, she joined a legal team that filed a gay marriage case in Vermont. The state's court issued a surprise ruling in 1999 that forced the Vermont legislature to take action. It did. Vermont became the first state to grant civil unions, not outright marriage, to gay couples.
After we achieved what we did in Vermont, I couldn't go anywhere in Massachusetts without people saying to me, well, if they can do this in Vermont, why can't we do something better in Massachusetts? And I have to say I agreed with that analysis. The Massachusetts commitment to equality and the Constitution is incredible. It was crafted by John Adams as multiple commitments and statements declaring the equality of all persons that the courts and this state have really taken seriously over the years. Not completely perfectly, but have definitely taken seriously.
However, at the time, the Massachusetts legislature had been introducing bills to ban gay marriage year after year. Nevertheless, in 2001, a group of plaintiffs came forward and Bonato took up their case, knowing full well that gay marriage was one of the most controversial, socially divisive issues in a generation.
Well, it's a battle we picked. And I have three brothers, as I mentioned, and we had plenty of games and plenty of competition, and I never liked losing. And my competition, you know, was honed, and I was determined, as was everyone here at GLAAD, to do what we needed to do to put forward the best case possible.
Bonato and her legal team had a considerable challenge before them. She calls it a legal Mount Everest. Public opinion was far from settled at the time. Deep-seated beliefs that marriage is expressly for procreation and that gay marriage is bad for children still held sway. And the state, which had the obligation to defend Massachusetts marriage laws, had an especially potent legal argument which boiled down to,
this is not a big deal. This is not a big human rights issue. This is not a civil rights issue. And essentially that the Commonwealth's laws are presumed to be constitutional and correct. And why would the court want to disrupt that?
Don't rock the historical or legal boat. That was the heart of the state's case against gay marriage, and it made legal experts working on the Goodridge case with Bonato very nervous.
Some of the private lawyers who were working on friend of the court briefs, who said things like, I never thought we could lose, but now that I've read the state's brief, I can see how you can dress it up to make it seem that this is permissible.
But Bonato found the most elegant counterargument in the Massachusetts Constitution itself, which begins, all people are born free and equal and have certain natural, essential, and unalienable rights. She intensely studied John Adams' historic document. It said all people. And on March 4th, 2003, Bonato says it was her job to convince SJC judges that all people included gay and lesbian couples in Massachusetts. It's a moment that still makes Bonato pause.
I mean, we know what you said, right? But
right.
What were you feeling and thinking in the moment?
I did not know what would happen in the court. I knew they would be prepared. I knew I would receive a lot of questions, and those were true. But I just really wanted to make sure that I conveyed to them as much as I could that we are really talking about the Constitution here. And that's what matters most, is the Constitution as it's applied in the lives of real people, where it really matters if they're treated equally or not.
A majority of the justices agreed. In November 2003, Massachusetts became the first state to legalize gay marriage, although the issue wouldn't be finally settled until May 2004, and only after ugly and protracted debate. Which is why Mary Bonato looks upon the Goodridge decision with what can be best described as tempered pride. It was an historic win, and because of it, she was able to marry her partner of 26 years, as did thousands of other Massachusetts couples.
I mean, there's plenty of times I have to still pinch myself because I am now, you know, legally married, and now my marriage is respected, and it's shocking at some level that this has happened. So all the people, and there have been many over the years, have said, I never thought I would see this in my lifetime, often telling me this as they're weeping. You know, I can understand that. I mean, when you grow up in a world where this is not even something you can talk about, the idea that you're as married as any other person on the planet in the United States of America is pretty incredible.
But Bonato also sees it as just one step forward in a long, still unfinished journey. And this is where I'd like to circle back to the idea we began with. Gay civil rights advocates call her the Thurgood Marshall of their movement. Mary Bonato demurs. But they may have a point. In 1954, Marshall challenged school segregation and took the historic Brown v. Board of Education case to the Supreme Court. But he did so only after a majority of states had banned segregation on their own. The timing was crucial, because essentially, Thurgood Marshall had asked the court to affirm what America was already doing on its own. Bonato believes in a similar strategy when it comes to the big prize concerning gay marriage. She takes a long view of civil rights history and believes it's worth waiting for an emerging national consensus on gay marriage before taking a blockbuster case to the Supreme Court. That moment may come sooner than she once thought. Though gay marriage is currently legal in just 14 states and the District of Columbia, a 2013 Gallup poll found that more than half of all Americans would vote in favor of a federal law legalizing gay marriage across the country. A fact which leaves Mary Bonato, the fierce and brilliant advocate of marriage equality in Massachusetts, characteristically humble and endlessly hopeful.
You're so much more an optimist than I thought.
Yeah, well, good. The thing that keeps me getting up every morning to do this work is that I really believe in people's capacity to be fair. I believe that we have shared values as a nation overall that includes commitment to freedom and to equality. And so I am hopeful.
Well, the rainy weather is complicating or slowing many people's holiday travel plans today.
Roads are slick and traffic is heavy. About a dozen flights out of Logan have been canceled, and a few other dozen are delayed. The MBTA is reporting no problems so far, while Amtrak trains between New Haven and Boston are delayed because of downed wires.
And as you make your holiday travel plans, we'll check in with our reporter who's out on the Mass Pike. But first, let's turn to meteorologist Rob Gilman. He co-owns Precision Weather Forecasting. Hi, Rob. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Good afternoon on this Thanksgiving Eve.
Well, good afternoon and happy Thanksgiving Eve to you. It's been raining on and off this afternoon. What are we going to see as the afternoon commute wears on?
Not going to see much pretty soon. The sun will be setting in about 40 minutes, and it's going to be a wet evening, but most of the rain from this storm is now history.
Good. So what about a flood advisory? We heard that a flood advisory in effect until 4:30 for much of New England. Tell us a little about that.
Again, the rain has been coming down in sheets. We've picked up on the order of 2 inches of rainfall. We haven't had a storm like this in Boston in about 5 months. So you have to go back to early June to see anything more than 2 inches in any one day. The storm itself is now tracking across the area. It's just getting to our north now, so the heaviest rain is winding down. There still will be a few showers left for the next few hours until about 7, 8, 9 o'clock tonight.
I see. And for people who might be thinking of delaying their holiday departures until tomorrow morning, what do conditions look like tomorrow?
Beautifully bright, but bitterly cold. We're going to be on the backside of this big storm that brought all of this moisture up our way, and that means rather than the subtropical air, it's actually warmer in Boston by about 30 degrees right now than it is in Atlanta. Boston is 61, and Atlanta's in the upper 30s right now. We're going to be feeling that Canadian air, so the temperature will be closer to 30 degrees in southern New England, and much of central New England will be in the 20s. With bright sun, and the wind will still be blowing, so it's going to feel like it's in the teens tomorrow.
So that's Rob Gilman. He's a meteorologist and co-owner of Precision Weather Forecasting, forecasting a bright, cold Thanksgiving day. Thanks, Rob.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
Well, let's turn now to WBUR's Jack Lepiarz, who's at the Westboro Service Plaza on the Mass Pike. Hi there, Jack.
Hi, Magna.
So you left the station, what, a couple hours ago? How was it driving out on the pike for you?
Well, I'm going to give you the reaction I've heard from so many other people here when I asked them how the traffic was, which was just laughing. I left Boston probably about 1 o'clock. I got here a little bit after 2 o'clock. Now, this is usually about a half an hour drive. At 1 in the afternoon, it turned into about an hour. Traffic, pretty much as soon as I got on the pike, was stop and go all the way here. Which is about 25 miles west of the city.
Okay, so slow as molasses in November, I guess. What are road conditions like?
The road conditions actually on the Mass Pike aren't too bad. You know, it's definitely wet. It's definitely, you know, there's a lot of moisture in the air, but you're going so slow that it doesn't really, you know, there's not much of a concern about hydroplaning or spinning out. I have heard reports that elsewhere, especially on local roads, there is flooding. Places where there's not quite as much traffic, that, you know, there is a concern. You need to keep your eyes out for you know, big puddles in the road.
And Jack, we've just got a couple seconds to go, and I'm not sure you know this, but do you know about road conditions or traffic on any other major thoroughfares around eastern Massachusetts?
I'm looking at the map right now. It actually looks not too bad for almost 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The expressway, obviously, is jammed the whole 9 miles and then on to Route 24. Mass Pike is the big trouble spot right now. You're looking at pretty much traffic starting at about the Alston tolls, going all the way out to 495 where I am. And then actually after that, all the way out to I-84, it's a pretty smooth ride.
WBUR's Jack Lepiarz out there on the slow-moving Mass Pike for us. Jack, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And stay with us. Coming up, Chef Tony Maws cooks up a Thanksgiving dinner for local firefighters and some great cranberry sauce for us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.